Welcome to Book Recos Between the Pages.
I'm Jess.
And I'm Lauren.
And we're the pals behind Book Recos.
This is the podcast where we chat all things books and just about everything in between.
Today, we are joined by the queen of summer and nostalgia, Carly Fortune.
Her latest book, This Summer Will Be Different, publishes next month, and we get to dive into it with her today.
Carly, no one makes me pine for summer the way that you do. So I'm absolutely delighted that you're joining us today. Thanks so much.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I totally agree with Jess and felt just completely transported, when reading your book. So please, can you start by telling our listeners what your latest book, This Summer Will Be Different, is all about?
Yeah, happily. It is about Lucy, a woman in her 20s who lives in Toronto, who travels to Prince Edward Island for the first time on a summer vacation with her best friend. Her best friend, Bridget, is from the island. But Bridget's flight misses her flight, so Lucy is there for her first day all by herself. She walks into a seafood restaurant and sees a very handsome man shucking oysters and sits down at the bar across from them. And they end up having a very steamy night together. They spend the night together. And in the morning, they realize that he is her best friend's younger brother. And very off limits. In fact, Bridget has given Lucy a rule for this trip. And one of her three rules for the trips was to not fall in love with her brother. And reasons for that become clear later on. And Lucy and this man, Felix, they reconnect over the course of about 5 years when Lucy is going back to visit the island with Bridget. And they try so hard to stay away from each other and find it very, very difficult. And you, in the book, you kind of see how their relationship evolves until this summer when Bridget flees to Prince Edward Island. She flees back home just ahead of her wedding. She calls Lucy up and is like, I need you to get out here. Like, please, please come. Drop everything that you're doing. And Lucy does and finds, immediately flies to Prince Edward Island, drops her life, and is confronted with her best friend who is acting very strangely, very out of character. She's trying to figure out what's going on with Bridget, but she's also, Felix is there too. And he seems a little bit different too. So she is like with the Clark siblings and trying to keep her heart safe and away from Felix and trying to figure out what's going on with Bridget. And I think what I love about it, it's a romance, but it's also about the love story of Lucy and her best friend, Bridget. So that friendship is like really core to the story.
Yeah, 100%. And don't you worry, we are going to come on to that. But I just wanted to start off with the fact that I read Every Summer After on a sun lounger in Sicily, and I read Meet Me at the Lake in one sitting in my garden on a very sunny day. But the weather is yet to turn nice here in the UK. It is so cold and miserable. Reading This Summer Will Be Different gave me the summer that I want right now, and it was amazing, but it also made me so much more excited for my upcoming travels. My first holiday is to Scotland, where I'm staying on a loch, so I'm so excited for all the lake vibes that you write so well. It'll be much colder, but that's fine. And so I just wanted to kick off by discussing why summer. You know, we love a beach read, you know, as people sort of call it, that summer book.
Yeah.
And there are kind of set vibes readers expect in a summer book. So what is it about those that draws you in to write them?
Well, there's a lot of reasons. One, when I'm writing, often now I start drafting in the fall, and I live in Canada, and then throughout the winter. So what is wonderful as a writer is that I also get to be transported to warmer days and, you know, beautiful starry nights in the summer. And I have that immersive experience when I'm writing, and I love that. I'm not a winter girl. I am not, I don't ski. I prefer summer. And I also love that these summery books, and I really try to transport you. Like, I really want you to Oh, thank you. I, especially with this book, I wanted you to be able to like feel the wind on your face. I wanted you to be able to taste the food and really bring you to Prince Edward Island, which is a very, very special place. I've traveled there 3 times now. And it's like the perfect read if you're on vacation, but if you don't have that, you can kind of escape into the book. And so you feel like you're in this beautiful place, snooping on real people, which I love. And it's, I think also for a lot of people, the only time they read is on their summer vacation. It's like they're like, they get that time, that time that is uninterrupted to dive into a book. And so I love being in a part of that experience.
Yeah, that's such a good point. My mom definitely only reads on holidays. And yeah, so then to make sure that they're reading that right book that's going to be pitched to them in the summer is like, makes total sense. I always love reading the acknowledgements in a book. And yours was a treat because there was acknowledgements and then also behind the book, which I'm going to come back to later. But I just wanted to pick up on the fact that you said you wanted this book to be fun. And it led to you kind of changing your lifestyle and daily routine, which I just loved. And so I wondered, is dancing around the house, wearing red lipstick, doing watercolors, something that you're always going to do when writing books now, or even when you're not writing, I guess?
What I'm trying to do very deliberately is have a creative life outside of writing. And the reason for that is because I was a journalist for 16 years before I made the switch to being an author full time. And in journalism, I put everything into my work, like every ounce of creativity, all my energy. And I wrote Every Summer After because it dawned on me that I had done nothing for myself. Every Summer After was, I didn't even set out to publish it when I began writing. It was just something I wanted to do for myself. And now that I write professionally, I don't want every bit of creative satisfaction I get or pleasure or enjoyment to be from writing. And Meet Me at the Lake was a very difficult book to write. And it was so hard for me because it was difficult, it made it more difficult because all I wanted was this joyful experience of writing. And I didn't have that. So I am trying to do things that are just outside of writing. So I picked up photography with film photography. I'm just trying to have a life that is not just work. And I'm a parent, and this is not just work and parenting.
I think that's such a lovely approach, and like it's something that I personally have tried to implement in my life as well. Like I have my career that I you know, that fills my days, but then, you know, I think about coming up for 10 years ago now, I trained as a yoga teacher because I love yoga. And so many people after I like got my qualification were like, so are you gonna like become a full-time yoga teacher now? And I very explicitly said, like, I don't want my hobby to turn into my livelihood and be the thing that I worry about, you know, to make bills and like is the thing that keeps me up at night. And that brings us on really nicely, actually, like the synergies between your own career journey and also Lucy's career journey in the book. Lucy starts, you know, we meet her 5 years ago at the beginning of the book, and she's just about to leave her job, or she's just left her job, and her parents are all very worried about her, but she's wants to pursue her, you know, passion of like flowers and working in her aunt's flower shop. And I don't think it's a spoiler to say that, you know, we meet Lucy in the present day, and she's now the manager of that shop. Can you talk to us a little bit about Lucy's own journey with her career and like how she's found that sort of friction between something she loves and something that pays the bills?
Yeah, I think, you know, this is something that I really relate to. Lucy's overall journey as a character is about kind of learning to trust her own mind. And so we see her, you know, make this big decision to work with her aunt in the flower shop to become a florist. And she is, as the years go by, she's really good at it. And her aunt ends up wanting to retire. She hands over the keys to Lucy, and Lucy is now like a manager. She's a boss. She's, and as she is kind of going deeper into this line of work, she's being a little bit pulled away from what she originally loved about the work, which is just working with flowers. And there is a storyline about how she kind of comes back to that and is like recalibrating what it is that she loves about what she does. And she makes some kind of big decisions around that. And I really relate to that because as I rose up in journalism, I was always an editor. So I was always behind the scenes, assigning stories, working with writers. And I'm also an ambitious person. And when you rise up, a lot of the times when you are getting promotions or, you know, as you're rising in your career, you're also then taking on management responsibilities. You are getting more of an inside look into how corporations work and the yeah. business. And by the time I was decided to write Every Summer After, I decided to write that book because I was so professionally frustrated. I had got to where I thought I wanted to be in my career. Running Refinery 29 Canada, I launched this media brand in Canada. There's a Refinery 29 in the UK. And so I was, you know, a boss. And I was so sick and tired of just fighting all the time. Like I was fighting with the company all the time and trying to like defend the people that I worked with, my employees. And I just wasn't happy. And it was very scary because I had worked so hard to get there. And then it was like, well, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And I thought about that. I started seeing a therapist at like, you know, when I kind of got there, when it's like, oh, I thought this was the thing and it is not the thing. And I do not, like, I don't know what to do with myself.
So that's so interesting. I don't want to take us off on too much of a tangent, but then how did you find the thing then? Because I'm sure that's something that a lot of people will really like find themselves relating in, Lucy, and also the story you've just shared.
Yeah, I had always loved writing. It's what I loved doing when I was a kid. I would write by hand stories. And I would tell stories on the school bus. And that was what I loved to do. But from a very young age, I didn't believe that becoming an author was something that would work out for me. Like it seemed so far-fetched. And that's why I ended up studying journalism. And I had no idea what to study because all I really wanted to do was write a book. But I was like, no, that you can't do that. That's not possible for you. And I loved magazines. So that's why I ended up going into journalism, because I just loved magazines so much. And when it was the summer of 2020, and I got off a really hard work phone call, and I was like, I need to do something for myself. I'm going to write a book because I have always wanted to write a book. That is the thing I've always wanted to do. And I'm going to do it. And I'm going to finish it by the end of the year. And it was writing Every Summer After was such a revelation. I was like, this is what I was meant to be doing. This is the thing. I was in my, I think it was 36. So it felt incredible to me. I was like, I am only now realizing what it is that I love to do. And it was profound.
And it checks out that book is pure escapism, that you were actually using it yourself as an escape.
Yes, yes, very much.
And I really love that you've learned the lesson as well of not having just one thing that gets all of your creative energy. Like you were just saying, you know, exploring watercolors and photography, you know, having those little pieces that also fill your creative cup. So it's, you know, you never start to burden what you love to do.
Yeah. And I can suck at it. Like I don't have to be good at it. I can just kind of fool around and I don't have to share it with anyone, or I can if I want to, and it doesn't matter if it's bad. I took a pottery class and I am an extraordinarily terrible potter. Like I was so bad that I was like, you know what, I'm not going to continue with this because it's just like, it's kind of like frustrating. But I like with watercolor, I don't care. And I, you know, my kids and I can like paint together and it's just fun. And I have so much joy from writing. It is still like the thing that really fills me up the most. And I love it so much, but it's also, you know, I have my own relationship to the books, but then it's not mine. I hand it over to the reader and yeah. It's not mine anymore. And I try not to be super aware as I'm writing that somebody will read it one day, but it, of course, I, it's in the back of your mind, like how the work will be perceived. And when you, it's fun to have projects where it doesn't matter.
Totally agree. And speaking of relationships to your books, let's talk then about some of the relationships that are in this book, because something you do so well is romance. And in this book, we've got, you know, everything. We've got forced proximity, we've got summer romance, we've got an off-limits relationship and friends to lovers. And, you know, the sort of will they, won't they between Felix and Lucy is absolutely electric, and the chemistry just oozes off the page. And it's obviously, you can see as the reader that it's been developing over sort of 5 years, which made it so believable. And, you know, what is it about these particular tropes or themes that you think readers particularly resonate with when it comes to romance books?
Well, I set out to write a book that was fun. I wanted to have a fun experience writing the book, and I wanted the reader to find it just be taken on a very enjoyable ride. And I think the, you know, the other kind of trope that's in there is best friend's brother. Like this, as you mentioned, this is kind of this off limits relationship. And there is something just inherently fun about that. And I think it is so juicy. And also, you know, I've heard from early readers, like it happens that you have a crush on your best friend sibling. And that is complicated for a number of reasons. And I love complications. And I think it is also, you know, Lucy and Felix, their relationship begins with physical chemistry. Like they have great physical chemistry. And I think that is very, I mean, that's kind of how we date these days. Like, we don't fall in love with somebody and then sleep with them. Like, not usually. Some people maybe. But, like, it takes a long time to, like, it can take a long time to realize how you truly feel about a person and what they mean to you. But, like, in the meantime, like, hopefully there's some great physical chemistry there. So that, to me, felt very real. So you have this kind of fun situation, but the feelings there are very relatable. And I love that. Like I love combining a situation that is just inherently juicy with emotions that feel so familiar.
Yeah. And I really am very excited to talk about another love story in this book, which is to Prince Edward Island. And
yes,
that is probably because I have a place that I go to every summer. And like when I'm there, there's almost this checklist of we have to go here, we have to do this, we have to eat this. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter that you do it every year. It's just like makes it so much more special and lovely. And that so came through in this book. And then, as I said, reading the acknowledgements, I got to the behind the book section. And so I would just love for you to share your inspiration behind getting the story here and, you know, giving readers who, well, listeners at this point that are yet to read it, that insight ahead of time. And please do mention all the wonderful Anne of Green Gables references that then went into the book.
Oh, yeah. My relationship to Prince Edward Island before I traveled there was always through Anne of Green Gables, the book, but also there are these 1980s films, which I'm not sure if they made it over to the UK. I'm not sure, but they starred Megan Follows and Jonathan Crombie as Anne and Gilbert. And I had them taped on VHS and I watched them over and over and over again. Like I tried to dye my hair the same shade of red that Megan Follows had all of high school, never worked. And that story is such a wonderful romance, but it's also a story of friendship and it's a story of found family and a woman who really is trying to find herself and she knows her own mind. And I loved Anne of Green Gables. And so I traveled to Prince Edward Island for the first time with my best friend, Meredith, when we were in our early 20s. And it was the first time we had been on a trip together. And it was magical. And of course, I just kept picturing Anne and Gilbert all over the island because the island is so like there's just these iconic red cliffs and the ocean. And I could just picture Anne everywhere. And we as soon as we got off the plane, we drove into Charlottetown, which is the main city. There's only two kind of major cities on the island, and they're still very, very, very small. And we went to a seafood restaurant, and we sat down at the counter, and there was a man shucking oysters, a cute man shucking oysters. And he, so we were from Toronto, and in Canada, nobody likes Toronto except Torontonians. So he asked us, where are you in from? And I said, Toronto. And he looked me in the eye and he said, I'm sorry, welcome home. And it really hit me that moment has stayed with me ever since. I did not hook up with him as Lucy did, but the island is very, very welcoming, and it's like no other place. And Meredith and I drove all around. We decided we would only eat seafood. We would not, like, if we were going to eat, it had to be seafood. There was no other meat would be involved. We like went to, we had a big lobster dinner. We stayed with her aunt in Summerside, and we went to the National Oyster Shucking Championship in Tyne Valley, which plays a big role in the book. There's kind of like a set piece scene that takes place at the Oyster Shucking Championship. And I, when I started writing Every Summer After, I got all these other ideas for things that I wanted to write. And one of the ideas I had, it wasn't really an idea, it was just, I really would like to write a book about a set on Prince Edward Island, because it is such a magical place. And it was so fun to write a contemporary romance there, because it's so well known for this very chaste romance of Anne and Gilbert. And I really wanted to, you know, play tribute to the place and look at it through a modern lens. And I think, I know Islanders are like super excited about the book, because there's so much love for Anne and Lucy, the author, Lucy Maud Montgomery. And there's a lot of tourism that is built around Anne of Green Gables, and people come from all over the world to the island to, have those experiences. But they're like, we love Anne, but it's so nice to have something that is modern set here.
That's good. If the locals have endorsed it, then you're onto a winner, right?
They have some of them have read it already, but they have like pre-endorsed it without reading it. And so I hope I don't disappoint them.
Well, they're getting ready for a saucy read, that's for sure. And I think let's come on to then the third love story of the book, which we love here at Book Recos, a friendship, you know, romance as much as anybody. Mm-hmm. And the bond you write between Bridget and Lucy, or B as she's called only by Bridget, is just so lovely to read. And obviously Lucy's going back, is obviously going behind her friend's back with Felix, mm-hmm. Which is really tearing her apart. But I guess also there's a sort of side to Bridget's life that she's not letting Lucy in on, which is like this sort of the reason why she's called Lucy back to the island. Mm-hmm. And yet these factors never really feel, you know, detrimental to their friendship, because you've just written it so well, and you're so, their friendship is so believable as well. And there are many times where I actually think, like, I have to remind myself that they've only actually been friends for like 5 years. I sort of think of them as these like childhood best friends who've known each other all their lives. How did you find that sort of, how did you do it, basically? How did you make these really like strong friendships, but have this sort of balance between secrecy of things they're not telling each other too?
Yeah, I wanted to write about the evolution of a friendship. And so they start off working together as colleagues. And I know from my experience that when you find a friend at work, you like, that is a very tight bond, especially if like if you have a boss you don't like, or if there's work gossip, or and so like that like instantly bonds you to someone. And both so Lucy has never really found a group that like really clicked for her, and she was kind of the odd duck in her family. And Bridget has moved to Toronto from Prince Edward Island and is trying to like make her own friends there. So they find each other at this kind of pivotal moment in their lives. And I see the story as a coming of age in your 20s story. Mm-hmm. So they're like, they're coming of age together. They're in their early 20s. They like find somebody, they latch onto them, and then they become roommates. So they are living together. They are sharing everything. They are, you know, dancing in the kitchen in their socks at night. They are telling each other all their secrets. They're seeing each other date, and they have movie nights, and they also hang out with Lucy's aunt, Stacy, and the three women have a little, they form a little family together in Toronto. But then of course, as we get older and have our careers expand, Bridget meets Miles, who she becomes engaged to. Bridget moves out of the apartment. She goes to move in with Miles. So it's not that they drift apart. It's that their relationship shifts as their lives shift. And what happens, I think, with secrets. So, you know, Lucy and Felix decide they're not going to tell Bridget what happened. And it doesn't seem like that big of a deal. Like Lucy can justify that. But as the years go on, the secrets kind of start piling up. And I think when you're not, at one point in Lucy and Bridget's friendship, they shared everything. And now they're getting older, they don't share everything. They have separate lives. And I think what you see in the book is they're kind of coming to terms, they're kind of realizing this, that like, we don't know everything about each other anymore, but we still deeply love each other. And they're trying to navigate what that means, like to have had this relationship where you were so attached and now you can't be attached anymore. And I loved writing about that kind of, that evolution, because, you know, our long relationships have so many phases. So we're seeing them go through one of their phases.
Yeah, you do it so well. And I was almost, obviously this is no spoilers, but on tenterhooks waiting to find out what Bridget was keeping. I had no idea. Like, I really couldn't guess.
I'm so glad.
So that was very well done. Obviously,
I have to say, I didn't really know either until I got to it. I had an idea, and then I got to it in the book, and then I was like, oh, it has to be this thing.
Yeah.
This is so heartbreaking. It's got to be this thing.
You had like a few, I guess it doesn't matter because the point is she's keeping a secret and we don't get to know about it. So it could have been anything. That's really fun. I didn't think about that.
It could have been anything. And then once I figured it out, I like, of course, went back and adjusted it. So it kind of like, if you reread the book, it all kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was definitely thinking, I mean, I won't spoil anything. I was thinking a lot of things. But I also wanted to ask a cheeky question of if you have a favorite of your books so far.
I can't pick a favorite because I love them all for different reasons. But I think this one is my best, I would say. Like, I think this one, maybe it's just because it's the one that I just wrote. But I think it combines what was great about Every Summer After and what was great about Meet Me at the Lake, in my opinion, which is Every Summer After had this like kind of fast paced, thrilling ride. I reread it recently and I was like, oh yeah, this is a very quick read. Like, this is a like juicy little quick read. And Meet Me at the Lake, I think has such a deep emotional core and is, I think my writing improved with Meet Me at the Lake. And I think that This Summer Will Be Different kind of combines that like thrill of Every Summer After with like the emotional core of Meet Me at the Lake. And it's kind of pulled that together. So I think it's my best, but I don't think I could pick a favorite.
Yeah, that's a great answer. And I agree. Yeah. Hearing you say that, that makes total sense. So other people's books, we always like to ask authors when they come onto our podcast, if they have a book reco to leave our listeners with. And that can be a book that you've recently read and loved, or it can be Anne of Green Gables, long-term vibe.
Well, if you have not read Anne of Green Gables, you really must, because it is extraordinary. It's just such a feat of, like, it's a literary classic, and Lucy Maud Montgomery was so far ahead of her time when she was writing. But in terms of newer books, I really loved the book How to End a Love Story. By Yulene Kwong.
Yes.
And it is, it's a rom-com. It's a debut romance. It is so, so funny. And I think humor is so difficult to get right. It is deeply funny, but it's also an exploration of grief. And it's set in a writer's room in Hollywood. And Yulene is a screenwriter, a filmmaker. So it's like full of that kind of like industry insider, it's a bit of a romp in the industry, and it's fabulous.
We have read it. And Lauren, are you feeling really validated right now that like we were right to enjoy it because Carly's also enjoyed it and recoed it?
It's such a brilliant book, and you're right. Like, I think knowing that she's a screenwriter as well is so important to know when you're reading the book as well. I just love knowing people's backgrounds, and same with you being, you know, having a career in journalism. I love knowing things like that because I can sort of see how they got to where their writing style is. I think it's a strong reco for sure. And we'll add all of those books into the show notes. And thank you so much for joining us. This summer will be different. Obviously, publishers in the UK in May. So everyone go off and pre-order it now. And it is a guaranteed summer vibe, isn't it?
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. This was such a pleasure.
Much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, like, subscribe, leave a rating and review. It costs you nothing, but it genuinely means the world to us.
And don't forget to share our podcast with your reading buddy because they might like to listen as well. And if you don't already, then follow us on Instagram at bookrecos for, funnily enough, more book recommendations.
See you next week.
We'll be here.